Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, February 15th, 2018. We'll start with an article on the front page. Scott, grand jury report slanderous. State's attorney calls investigation a witch hunt, by Allison Petty, Herald and Review, Decatur. Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott on Wednesday denounced a grand jury's report about his office work practices as slanderous and unlawful, and he said the jury went way beyond its authority when it called for a third-party review of his office. Special Prosecutor Stephanie Wong, a Bloomington attorney, led the investigation into allegations of misconduct against Scott. She filed a report of the grand jury's findings in Macon County Circuit Court last week and said no criminal charges would be filed. However, the grand jury report described the work environment in Scott's office as toxic and threatening. The jurors recommended forwarding their findings to the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, which investigates allegations of wrongdoing against lawyers. Scott on Wednesday questioned Wong's fairness, saying she had never tried to talk to him since she was assigned the case in May. Our office exhibits a supportive atmosphere in which a teamwork attitude is displayed on a daily basis, he wrote in a three-page statement, a fact of which Wong, who has never set foot in our office, is totally unaware. The Herald and Review provided a copy of Scott's statement to Wong on Wednesday and sought comment. She said she would respond Thursday. Greg Mattingly, the Macon County board member whose petition started the year-and-a-half investigation into Scott, agreed with him on Wednesday that the grand jury had gone too far. He said grand juries are meant to determine if there is probable cause to go forward with charges, not, as the jury concluded in its report, whether the charges can be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. They went too far, and beyond what a grand jury is supposed to do, said Mattingly, who retired in 2012 after more than 35 years in legal practice that included several years as a prosecutor. Randy Cox, a Springfield attorney who handles criminal defense cases, said he has never seen a grand jury report like the one in Scott's case in more than 25 years of legal practice. In general, grand juries either indict or they don't, he said. It's not commentary, if you will. Witch hunt. The allegations against Scott date back to September 2016, when Mattingly and attorney John Davis filed the petition seeking an investigation. Scott, a Democrat, was facing Republican Dan Hassinger in the November election that year. Scott was accused of involving his staff in inappropriate political activity as he campaigned for re-election, an accusation that the grand jury found was 1 week beyond the statute of limitations for criminal charges. He was also accused of asking employees to shuttle his children in county-issued vehicles and storing pornographic material on a county-owned thumb drive, both charges that the grand jurors said they did not believe could be proven. Scott repeatedly denied the allegations and said they were motivated by politics, an assertion he continued Wednesday. He described Mattingly and Davis as political supporters of Hassinger. This proceeding was a politically motivated witch hunt, funneled by the desire for revenge on the part of disgruntled former employees of our office, he said. Mattingly said he was not a strong supporter of Hassinger. He marched in one parade for Hassinger because he happened to be at the parade for another reason and was asked by the Macon County Republican Party chairman to participate, he said. Mattingly said he talked to five employees of Scott's office, three of whom were still working for him at the time, before he decided to file the complaint. And I damn near chickened out. I weighed whether I wanted to go forward with this for a month and a half, he said. I finally decided it wasn't my job to decide whether it was or wasn't misconduct. It was my responsibility to step forward. The original complaint alleges that Scott allowed employees to engage in electioneering within county offices, used his county-owned smartphone for political and personal uses, asked an employee of the Macon County Sheriff's Office to support his campaign in community parades, showed pornographic material to a female state's attorney employee and female crime victim on a computer owned by the county. Davis could not be reached for comment Wednesday evening. Hassinger, who lost elections to Scott in 2016 and 2012, denied any involvement in the allegations. Grand jury's role. Grand jury investigations are conducted behind closed doors. Prosecutors interview witnesses and present evidence, and the grand jury determines whether there are grounds for criminal charges. Cox, the Springfield criminal defense attorney, said grand jury proceedings are secret, and the subject of the investigation typically is not asked to testify. Cox was speaking in general about legal practices and not specifically about Scott's case, in which he was not involved. Generally, all you're seeing with them is the charge, or you're not seeing a charge, he said. In Scott's case, the grand jury said it found coercion, favoritism, inadequate record-keeping, retaliation, and abuse of power in Scott's office, and recommended a third-party review of human resource practices, record retention, and separation of duties. But it's not clear who could even conduct such a review. Macon County Board Chairman Jay Dunn said he did not believe it was the place of the county board. We set his budget, but he's supposed to run his office, he said. Dunn said the board's Justice and Finance Committees would likely discuss the matter. Mattingly, a member of the board's Justice Committee, said the board doesn't have oversight over Scott's work practices. He's an elected official, Mattingly said. He gets to run his office. Scott said Illinois law does not give grand juries power to issue general reports. Further, he cited an appellate court ruling that said such reports could be considered libelous and could subject a person to rebuke and ridicule, even though not officially charged with a crime. He said the report had defamed and insulted an entire office of hardworking, dedicated public servants. There are 33 employees in the state's attorney's office, 17 attorneys, 14 support staff, and 2 investigators. And Scott said they did not deserve to be denigrated by Wong and the grand jury report. While the grand jury also recommended its findings be forwarded to the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission, or ARDC, no one will know whether that has been done for months, if ever. The commission's investigations into complaints are confidential, said Cox, who has represented other lawyers involved in disciplinary matters before the commission. It can take quite a long time because of the complexity of it, he said. Until a certain point, the public won't know about disciplinary proceedings, he said. If evidence of misconduct is found, the case could ultimately proceed to a hearing board. Potential discipline runs the gamut, everything from nothing in terms of it getting dismissed to disbarment, Cox said. Scott said Wednesday he did not know whether he was under investigation by the commission. Timing issues. Wong was appointed to lead the investigation by DeWitt County Judge Carly Koritz. The judge said in a court order that he had reached out to a number of state's attorney's offices around the state to find a special prosecutor, but those efforts were unsuccessful. He subsequently denied a request from the county to appoint a prosecutor from Randolph County, about 165 miles from Decatur. The Illinois Attorney General's office said in May that it would not serve as a prosecutor because of a conflict of interest. On Wednesday, Mattingly criticized that delay, saying it pushed the electioneering allegation against Scott past the statute of limitations. If they had not sat on their hands for 4 months, he would be facing a charge of misconduct, Mattingly said. The county is required to pay Wong's attorney's fees, which are $11,541, and another $8,102 for an investigator who worked for her. If a public prosecutor had been filed, Scott said, taxpayers would not be paying the fees for a private attorney. The amount of hours she said she worked on the case, 45.7, is less time than the attorneys in our office work in a typical week, he said. If our prosecutors were paid at her requested rate, their individual salaries would exceed $600,000 a year, he said. Dunn said he was pleasantly surprised by the amount for the attorney's fees, which he anticipated would be higher. He suggested that the money could come from the budget for Scott's office. Mattingly said the money also could come from a separate fund for legal judgments. More online, read Macon County State's Attorney General, Attorney J. Scott's full statement and the grand jury findings with this story at herald-review.com. Proposal bad news for Decatur. Continued loss of state revenue would add to deficit woes. By Tom Lisi, Herald and Review. Decatur. City governments across Illinois, including Decatur, won't get the relief they were hoping for in Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's 2019 budget proposal introduced Wednesday, which calls for keeping local shares of state income tax revenue at lower levels for another year. If you have a one-time hit, you weather that storm. But if this is an ongoing thing, it's not going to work out very well, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. The governor, in an address in front of the General Assembly, said he could cut taxes by $1 billion if lawmakers approve changes to the pension system and state worker health insurance. Also part of the plan is addressing funding for municipalities. The reason? When lawmakers finally passed a budget last summer, after 2 years of gridlock, cities across the state took a hit. The budget cut their share of state income tax by 10%, which amounted to about $1 million in revenue for Decatur. It's a major component of Decatur's current $3.2 million deficit. State law calls for returning the shares to prior levels next year. City officials had hoped that provision would limit bigger deficit troubles. Instead, Rauner's recommended budget proposal would create a similar-sized loss to city revenue in 2019. This potentially moves us closer to the strong possibility of the need to make substantial, difficult reductions in our budget, City Manager Tim Gleason said. We also know that there is still a long way to go in terms of work to be done by the General Assembly and before a final decision is made. Cities across Illinois are facing similar financial troubles, in part because of the state law change. Local shares of state income taxes are the financial foundation that most communities build from to deal with tough economic times like we're experiencing now across the state, said Brad Cole, executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, a statewide advocacy group for municipal governments. Lawmakers approved the new budget over Rauner's veto in July. When asked why the governor had decided to include the provision in his proposal for next year, Rauner spokeswoman Rachel Bold on Wednesday said, "Last year's budget, enacted over Governor Rauner's veto, put this policy in place. Our budget extends it another year." "From our standpoint, this was a one-time revenue idea for a reason," said John Patterson, spokesman for Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago. "We look forward to hearing the governor's argument for extending a policy he vetoed last year and presume he would be bringing Republican lawmakers' support to back it up." If any local governments had asked whether they could rely on the previous income tax shares, State Senator Dale Ryder, Republican of Mattoon, said he would have told them it wasn't likely to happen. "There is going to be continued pain and sacrifice if we're going to get back on our feet and get the billing cycle down to normal," Ryder said. "This is going to go on for another 2 or 3 years. You've got to be honest with people, and they don't want another state income tax increase either." On the local level, Decatur City Council members seem to have no appetite for tax increases either at this point. "I think the people want us to work with the money that we've got and work within that limitation," City Councilman Pat McDaniel said Wednesday. City staff have floated a number of preliminary ideas and options on how to make up for lost revenue, including cuts to funding for local organizations and reworking building deals related to police headquarters and city offices. It's unclear how viable restructuring the city's building deals are at this point, and how many of them would need to be successful to avoid painful staff layoffs or cuts to city services. "Something's got to give," City Councilman Bill Faber said. If we don't have those sources of state tax revenue, we're going to have to make cuts, which is going to affect the health and welfare of our community. If there's no money, there's no service. I think we need to plan for the worst at this moment, City Councilwoman Dana Ray said. Gleason has pledged to give a public update every month at City Council meetings on where to find savings. We're monitoring this month by month, and staff is looking at this every day, Moore Wolf said. We will do what we have to do, and there will be cuts somewhere. No one wants to cut personnel or slow down services or cut services, but we just can't have everything. Decatur Airport. Cape Air takes maiden flight to St. Louis. 40 passengers greet city's new carrier service. By Tony Reed, Herald and Review. Decatur. 40 passengers on Wednesday flew on Decatur's new airline, Cape Air, marking the first day of service in a months-long bumpy process to change carriers. The inaugural flight left at 7 a.m. for St. Louis-Lambert International Airport. The airline, which received a federal essential air service subsidy in December for Decatur service, also provides daily flights to O'Hare International Airport in Chicago, both using a twin-engine Cessna that seats 9. Amy Coverstone of Decatur and her 6-year-old granddaughter Kylie were on the first flight. They had never flown out of Decatur Airport before Wednesday and had not been following the essential air service decision closely. When the plane touched down, Amy Coverstone said the experience was quick and easy, and she complimented the Cape Air staff. It was a much smaller aircraft than I thought, but the flight was fine, Amy Coverstone said. With a thumbs up and a smile, Kylie Coverstone agreed. The Department of Transportation chose Cape Air over SkyWest, the Utah-based airline preferred by the Decatur Park District and several key business leaders, especially Archer Daniels Midland Company. The department has said the jet service would cost $700,000 more to subsidize. AirChoice One has been the airport's commercial air carrier since late 2009, but the park board did not support its bid to continue. The contract is for 2 years. SkyWest appealed the decision in January. Also using the service Wednesday was Patrick Kagarama. Although he wasn't visiting Decatur Airport or flying its new air carrier under the happiest of circumstances. Kagarama, on a brief stopover Wednesday on his way home to St. Louis, was returning from a long trip back to his native African nation of Rwanda to bury his late father. He'd flown Cape Air from Chicago to Decatur and was due to fly them again to the Gateway City. I'd not been on a small plane before. I was scared at first, he said, glancing at the 9-seat twin-prop Cessna 402 parked on the runway. But I feel much better now. The flight wasn't bad at all. I fell asleep. A love-at-first-flight story is how Cape Air was billing itself as it began operations on Valentine's Day as the new Decatur Air Service provider. The Massachusetts-based airline flies passengers around under the corporate acronym of MOCHAHAGOTDI, which translates as Make Our Customers Happy and Have a Good Time Doing It. Founded in 1989, it took off fast and now operates a fleet of 83 Cessna 402s, among several other aircraft, and recently carried more than 686,000 passengers in a year. It grew up offering service in exotic playgrounds of the rich, like Cape Cod, where home prices can soar towards $50 million, and Martha's Vineyard and the Caribbean. Decatur might seem like an odd fit, but the company has long had a presence in the Midwest and serves many communities out of St. Louis. It's also found a niche in competing for essential air service contracts, which allow for air travel for cities that would struggle to attract a passenger service otherwise, like Decatur. We see these services as a lifeline for people, said Trish Lorino, Cape Air's Vice President for Marketing and Public Relations. Not just connecting at airports, but getting to doctors and medical appointments and for their jobs and businesses. Decatur Airport Director Tim Wright hopes Cape Air will do much to lift his airport's business prospects. He said Cape Air soars because it has interline agreements with big carriers like Delta, United, American, and JetBlue, making connecting flights and luggage movements much more seamless. And with Cape Air, you can find their reservation system on Expedia, Travelocity, Orbitz, and all those sites, he said. That kind of convenience already was a big hit with international travelers Andressa Lacerda and Adam Noble, Executive Vice President and Chief Executive Officer, respectively, and co-founders of Canadian biotechnology firm NobleGen. They were in Decatur, hoping to foment some business partnerships, and were delighted to discover a new air service that would whisk them on to St. Louis, their next stop. Taking this Cape Air flight is very convenient, said Noble. I think we added 2 hours to the business part of the visit because we were able to save time by flying out of here. Lacerda said their firm is based in a small Ontario town, and they understand the business value of air service access. It's a big attractor for business, she added. It's essential. Herald and Review staff writer Jalen Cook, reporting from St. Louis, contributed to this report. This week at heraldreview.com/calendar. Friday. Computer class. Advanced Excel. 10 a.m. to noon. Decatur Public Library Computer Lab. 217-424-2900. Extension 7. Register. Saturday. Richland Alumni Association Trivia Night. 5 to 8 p.m. Richland Community College, Schilling Center. 217-875-7200. Extension 6203. $10. Doors open at 5 p.m. Trivia begins at 6 p.m. Teams of up to 8 people. Gift baskets, drawings, food, cash bar. Reservations. In brief, Herald and Review staff and news service. Decatur. Senior tax forms available. Macon County's 2018 Senior Citizen Assessment Freeze Exemption Forms are now available at most area banks, credit unions, libraries, or post offices, or at the County Assessor's Office, 141 South Main Street, Suite 401. Those needing assistance may bring 2017 income information to the Assessor's Office to verify eligibility and get help completing the paperwork. For more information, visit co.macon.il.us/supervisor-assessments.php or call 217-424-1364. Decatur. State science scores proficient. 27% of Decatur Public Schools students are proficient on new state science standards, data released Wednesday shows. The 2017 Illinois Science Assessment says French Academy, with 2.6% of students testing as proficient, and Robertson Charter School, with 9.4%, had the lowest performances. Johns Hill Magnet School, with 59%, and Garfield Montessori School, with 52.6%, had the highest performances. Area scores were better, with 71.5% of Mount Zion students, 72.5% of Cerro Gordo students, and 78% of Monticello students showing proficiency. Questions on the science test ask students to apply their scientific knowledge and reasoning to real-world problems, with the goal of preparing them of post-secondary education and career. The new science standards took effect in February 2014. The new standards represent a shift in how students engage with and how educators teach science, said State Superintendent Tony Smith. The new standards make science more accessible, opening career and college doors for students. Neither the 2016 or 2017 results will count towards ratings for schools and districts, according to the Illinois State Board of Education. The percentage of students scoring in the proficient category will contribute 5% to each school and district's rating beginning in 2020. Bloomington. Steampunk event presenters wanted. Organizers of this year's Cogs and Corsets, a steampunk happening, are accepting applications for presentations, panels, and workshops for the weekend event, set for June 1 through 3 in Bloomington. Experts in history, the steam era inventions, and other aspects of the steampunk genre may submit an online application for review by April 15. For more information, visit www.cogsandcorsetsil.com or call the McLean County Museum of History at 309-827-0428. Monticello, Experience the Hops. Allerton Park and Retreat Center is scheduled to hold Experience the Hops on February 24th and 25th. The event will have beer tastings, educational seminars, dinner, an overnight stay in the estate, breakfast, and Sunday morning hike. Prices are $5 for tastings only to $298 for the double occupancy full package. Register at allerton.illinois.edu/weddings-and-special-events or email dole2@illinois.edu. Effingham, cram the cars with canned goods. HSHS Home Care and Hospice is collecting non-perishable food at a pair of car dealers during their Cram the Cars donation drive, now through February 28th. Donated items will help stock the Catholic Charities food pantry. Foods like pancake mix, syrup, pasta sauce, granola, and oatmeal are on the wish list, along with canned fruit, low-salt vegetables, and other healthy foods, can be dropped off at Dan Hecht Chevrolet Toyota and Roy Schmidt Honda in Effingham. Chicago, Legionnaires case confirmed. Officials say one patient at a mental health facility in southern Illinois has tested positive for Legionnaires' disease. Illinois Department of Human Services said in a Wednesday statement that the patient at the Chester Mental Health Center was being treated and is in stable condition. The agency received the test results Tuesday. It said it's working with Illinois Department of Public Health to determine the source of the bacteria while also monitoring other patients. Legionnaires is contracted by people who inhale vapor from infected water. The health department's statement said there are about 300 cases reported each year in Illinois. Public attention in recent months has focused on the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy, where Legionnaires has contributed to the deaths of more than a dozen residents since 2015. Springfield, plaque commemorates Obama's speech. There's a new plaque at the state capitol in Springfield commemorating President Barack Obama's 2016 speech to lawmakers in the Illinois House. The Chicago Tribune reports that the marker hangs behind the speaker's podium that Obama used to give the address in February 2016. The then-president asked lawmakers to set aside partisan differences and work to end Illinois' long budget impasse. Illinois lawmakers approved a budget last summer. The black and gold plaque includes Obama's signature, a quote from Obama, and the state seal. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, February 15th, 2018. Please stay tuned.